Today, I have with me Gabriela Cuevas, Senior Relationship Manager at Vendition, and we are so excited to go into great detail on how to best prepare for an interview, get ahead of potential objections, and just roll into that interview completely fearless and confident. So with that, help me in welcoming Gabriela Cuevas. She's going to give us a little insight into her role and how she helps aspiring SDRs.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Penelope, for having me on here and chatting about how to perfect your interview for the SDR position. Just to give a brief context about myself, I'm a relationship manager here at Vendition. I work in our territory of San Francisco, so that means that I help both hiring managers figure out what they're looking for in prospective new hires and also candidates find that ideal new professional home. Specifically recruiting for the SDR role, and in the midst of it, we do a lot of training, coaching, and feedback sessions to best prepare you for that ideal job.
Wow, Gabriela, I can't even imagine having someone like you help me through that transition when I was looking for my first opportunity or even looking to transition in my own professional career. So that kind of leads me to one question that's always top of mind for candidates, especially going into a phone screen where they have about 30 seconds to a minute to set expectations, make a great impression. Can you kind of share with me some tactics that help candidates successfully set up the interview when asked the question, "Tell me about yourself"?
Definitely. And just to voice a little bit more on the daunting interview process, I don't think anyone teaches you how to interview. You just do it and you either get rejected or pass through to the next step, and you don't get that tangible feedback. So that's something we really provide here at Vendition. And that elevator pitch is what we call it here, about yourself, is key to really laying the foundation and setting the stage for the entire interview. You don't have much time in an interview to chat about yourself. And the way that I like to see this response is it's about 40 to 50 seconds. You're not going through every single role on your resume. You're not going on a whole tangent about your family and your hometown and all of that. What you're really answering is, who is Gabriela and why is she going to be of value to this role? So the way that I like to see this is you're always tying it back to tech sales. The about you section or question is essentially the why tech sales question. You're providing a brief overview on the soft skills and maybe technical skills that you have for the role, and then getting right into why you want to apply to the SDR role.
Wow, thank you. I especially loved how two different times you pointed out the importance of relating it back to why you're interested in applying for that role, because I myself am guilty of giving it about me, getting so caught up in the tangent of what I'm saying that I forget, oh, I really need to snip this up, circle it out, and make sure that it's landing well with the other person and makes it that my intention is clear for this interview. So thank you so much on that one. I appreciate it. So that leads me to my next question. Why sales is a question that comes up very often, obviously, for a sales interview. And oftentimes, I think the candidates are just not clear on what the expectations are when asked this question. So I would love it if you could elaborate there.
Definitely. So the why sales question can be daunting. I understand that. But the main thing I want to say is what managers are doing when they ask this question is they're looking for any doubt or hesitation that you're just applying to this role to apply to the role. Because essentially the SDR role is an incredible launching point to tech, right? You can go into so many different sectors. You're always going to have to know how to sell, whether you're on a marketing team or a customer success team, whatever team you're on in the business, you're going to have to know how to sell. So they're really looking for those hungry go-getters that are passionate about sales. So you have to be concrete and specific about why sales. And what I mean by that is, you know, was your mom, dad, or mentor in sales? Did you see, you know, his or her success? Is that why you're excited? Are you excited about the commission structure and the bonus that you get at the end of the month? This is why so many people pursue sales. And it's okay to talk about money motivation, but say it in a professional way. Say something like, I want to see my hard work reflected on my paycheck. You know, phrases like this don't just scream, oh, I want to make a ton of money. And then, you know, lastly, like, I really want you to demonstrate that hustle, grind, and coachability in this response. So I would, you know, really, really encourage you to think about a short 30 to 40 second response about why you're genuinely applying for this role. And, you know, make sure you're concrete about it and bounce ideas off of, you know, other friends applying for this role or family members, but it has to be specific.
Thank you so much for sharing, because oftentimes it can get uncomfortable, especially to share that you are a go-getter and that you are excited about those opportunities to be rewarded for your hard work. And the way you phrased it so eloquently made those listening, okay, easily digestible. I can take that on. I can repeat it in the interview. That's something in my heart I genuinely do want. But the way Gabriella articulated it made it sound a little bit less selfish, I guess, if you will. Can you kind of expand on some areas where people make mistake in regards to the why sales question?
Definitely. So don't say you just want to build relationships. Don't say that you're personable. Don't say that you're good at talking to people. These are all red flags that the manager is going to be like, well, first off, as an SDR, you're not really talking to people. It's a grind. It can be somewhat of a monotonous and tough role, because 98% of the people you're reaching out to are going to hang up on you. They're not going to respond. So you're not talking to people. So do not say that. And I would say, you know, just another mistake is not really just properly answering the question. I think sales is a very specific type of career path. And with that, I really want to hear how you're going to add value to my team. So for example, if you were, you know, an alumni cold caller, or if you were a tutor, or if you were a babysitter, it doesn't matter what you did, call out some of the soft skills that a salesperson needs. So what I mean by this is strong communication skills, coachability, and grit. And if you're able to demonstrate that with something in your background, then call it out and talk about why that would make you successful in a sales role.
Beautiful. I hope that answers your question. No, it really does, especially when you gave the criteria around not just voicing certain attributes that you feel as though you possess and that relate to sales, but backing those up with specific examples. And I love how you pointed to stressing the importance of providing an example that directly relates to sales. And oftentimes there's going to be other questions that come up unexpected. Can you kind of visit the structure around answering those questions, around highlighting data points of excellence, giving examples, and how not just in the answer of why sales, but why this is important for every role?
Yes. And I love that you used data points of excellence. This is a very common term that I use in my interview prep. And concrete examples is another one. So it's so key to provide specific examples. Do not just say, but you have to prove and demonstrate and show. And you have to do that with specificity, because at the end of the day, every good salesperson is going to be able to sell themselves. Whether it's walking through, you know, a time that they successfully, you know, pitched something or led a team meeting or was successful on a project or completed a thesis, whatever it is, they successfully know how to concisely answer that in 2 minutes. And so if you can't do that, the manager is not going to be confident that you're going to be able to sell the product. So something that I really encourage candidates to use is the who, what, when, where, why, and how method. And I can walk this through if we have enough time, but it's important to include every single element of an example. And a good storyteller is able to paint a picture for the interview on why they're coachable, why, you know, they were organized. Don't use vague terms and buzzwords, excuse me, because that's going to disengage the interviewer, but instead paint a concise picture.
Thank you. The who, what, where, how, and why. Speaking to the specific examples, let's say they're asked a question about, tell me about a time where you stepped into a leadership position, even though it may have not been the title. Tell me about a time when this, that, and the other. These experiential questions that are pointing to you bringing them a feeling of how you acted in that moment produced a result. I'm guilty of this, Gabriella, where I get into an interview, I get so excited about the question, I go through my who, what, where, how, why, when, the whole spiel, and then I don't stress the importance of enough of why that example is valuable to that specific role. So do candidates often make the mistake of telling the story and telling a great structured story and then kind of forgetting the most important part?
Exactly, Penelope. The biggest thing that I stress when I go through the who, what, when, where, why, and how is the why and the how. And so I'm going to break this down for you. Let's just use an example off the top of my head. I'm working with a candidate from UC Berkeley who has been cold calling for 3 years. And she, quite frankly, is a badass. she has been promoted multiple times. And she walks me through this beautiful story of reaching out to someone in the College of Natural Resources at Berkeley, an alum. And she told me the persona. She told me what exactly she said on the phone to him and what she said to entice him to in a conversation. She gave me the context. You know, this was at the end of the year, May 2018. She demonstrated why it was important that specific call actually allowed her to raise $5,000. And so that kind of hit her over the edge and allowed her to get promoted and hit an accelerator for her quota. But she didn't relate it back to the SDR role, which is the how portion. How does your experience, let's say her name is Sally, relate to the SDR role? And so I need you to explicitly bridge the gap. And what I mean by that is bridge the gap between your past work experience being a cold caller for your college and to the SDR role. So saying something simply like, yeah, and here you see I've demonstrated that I'm able to successfully cold call and close a prospect on a single call and also overachieve my goals and KPIs. I know they don't call them KPIs, but I know as an SDR, this is something you're going to be doing on a daily basis, and I'm confident that I'll be able to see success in it. And so the point of that is to provide relevance to your application. And also, you know, I encourage candidates to end the example on that note, because it allows the interviewer to see, okay, Sally's qualified. She knows why she's qualified, and she's going to kick butt in this role. So I really, really encourage you to always end the example of it that way, because it really just makes your application that much more relevant.
Yes, Sally. Woo, 5,000 in the college position. That's amazing. And I love how you beautifully showed us how to get through your example and then pause, use a transitional statement to revisit why it's important to them. For example, you said, here you see that. It could be whatever transitional statement comes natural to the candidate to be able to get them to the step of, here's the example, now here's my reflection and connection back to you. So thank you for showing us an example of that where you smoothly transitioned into the example and then boom, pause. It's okay to pause. We're in an interview, it's a conversation, and then boom, smoothly transitioned into it. That was great.
And I want to add one more thing, Penelope, just because you reminded me of something. It's okay for it to feel redundant in the beginning. I've had a lot of candidates be like, well, didn't I already explain all that? Doesn't the interviewer already know? And no, don't assume that the interviewer knows anything. And, you know, you really have to just put that closing statement to finalize the touch. And don't think it's redundant. It's important.
Absolutely. And when candidates think about the things they buy and they purchase, whether that be a Core Power gym membership, if that person has a consultation with them, they're relating what they listen to and learn from them and repeating it back to make sure that you're checking in with them and you're validating
exactly
their questions. Love that. I'm going to transition a little bit here. We have both the career switchers or people who have already been SDRs who are applying for an SDR role and those, you know, aspiring SDRs who are looking for their first opportunity. And oftentimes when in the industry, which I think, you know, people who've been in the industry for a long time, they understand, but those entering or transitioning might not understand that a manager interviewing an SDR who already has prior SDR experience is going to have some ingrained hesitations about bringing that SDR on. Can you kind of explain what some of those hesitations may be and how a candidate can get ahead of those reservations prior to preparing for the interview?
Definitely. Yeah. So it's tough. You know, this role, they're on the job recs, they're asking for 1 to 2 years of SaaS selling experience. And then you find a candidate with over a year of SDR experience. And the manager's like, no, hold up. I don't want to interview this candidate. They have too much experience. So it's a very interesting fine line for this role and this industry. But I would say the biggest reason why managers are skeptical or hesitant to interview people with more than a year of SDR experience is because they're trying to sniff out, is this person really able to do this role again? Are they going to be comfortable cold calling and cold emailing day in and day out? Do they have the stamina to continue prospecting, or are they just trying to get promoted quickly? So I think that's what's really in the back of a manager's mind. And so it's up to you as a candidate to bring those data points of excellence. So what I mean by that is if you have over a year of SDR experience, you had KPIs, you've seen successes, you have generated revenue for the organization. So bring those specific stories because you're going to have a leg up on everyone else who's not able to speak to those specific achievements. And, you know, I'd be confident and willing to say that you are ready to stay in the SDR role. Don't ask to jump to promotions on the first phone screen. It's, of course, okay to say that one day you want to be an account executive, but don't be assuming that the manager is going to promote you after 6 months.
Sure. Thank you for explaining what's going on in the mind of a manager interviewing an SDR who already has that experience, and then giving us some positive examples from that past experience too, because that leader can almost lean on that person a little bit more to make sure those new hires have a buddy they can reach out to and say, hey, what was it that you said in that one email where the prospect replied and you got a demo? Is there any way you could help me out, or we could have a coffee chat, something like that? So thanks for sharing. Not to turn things more to the negative aspect, but I think it's always great to highlight some of the things that we can do wrong in an interview. And oftentimes, sometimes it's not your choice when you leave a company. And sometimes we have a pandemic where thousands of people get laid off and stores are shutting down all over the world. In any instance, Gabriella, when you have left a position to pursue a new opportunity, or it was not your choice to leave, but you're still pursuing a new job, what are there any mistakes that candidates make when asked the question, why did you leave your last position?
I'm really glad you asked this question, Penelope, because I think it's not talked about enough from an interview prep standpoint. So many people fumble on this question when I ask them, so why did you leave your last role? And they really haven't thought about how to properly articulate that. So I would say, number one, do not badmouth the company. Even if it was a horrible situation, you had a monster of a manager, do not badmouth the company. It doesn't demonstrate that you have good characteristics to be moving on into a new role. So I would say something I like to do is always state a token of gratitude. So for example, yeah, I had a really great run at X company. I'm very thankful for the experience of cold calling, learning how to build a book of business, and also just managing my time. I was responsible for doing so much on a daily basis. And so inserting that token of gratitude really just sets the tone of the question a lot different. And then after I would, you know, kind of took the skills that I've developed, the things that I've learned, and I'm grateful for that, I get right into pivoting to why you're applying to X company and X role. Because at the end of the day, you want to veer that question. You want to answer that question, but you want to veer it to why you're excited about X opportunity. So that's where you need to have a good research answer on whatever company you're applying to and be able to you know, pivot quickly and properly so some manager is not continuing to dig at that question.
Gosh, oh, the token of gratitude, key takeaway there in making sure not only that's a part of your example for why you left your last company, but when any challenges are expressed, I think even I'm guilty of this sometimes saying, I had to do this, I had to do this, or I got an opportunity to, I failed here, and this is what I learned from it. I'm so grateful for that lesson. So thank you so much for that reminder of gratitude and appreciation for the lessons learned and moving on to the next chapter. One thing that really makes me a little nervous when I'm interviewing, and I know this is the same for a lot of other people, is just when you're wanting to be humble, but you're also wanting to brag about yourself. And then you get the question out of the blue, any part of the interview, and they ask you, well, Gabriella, why should I hire you? And like in your head, you're thinking, there's so many amazing things, but you're like, well, wait a minute. Now I'm getting nervous sweat. Here we go. So give us your best structure for that one.
Definitely. It's okay to feel nervous. Practice is key. It's my favorite and least favorite question all in one. So I was a history major in college, so I wrote a ton of essays. And the way that I like to see the why hire you question is kind of like a summary or a conclusion of a formal essay. It most typically happens at the end of an interview, just like at the end of an essay. You are not including any new information, but you're simply making a summary of the entire interview. So something that I like to do in a structure I can provide you with is highlighting three strengths or skills that you talked about in an interview. So for example, saying something like, yeah, and James, I think you should hire me because I have strong communication skills, because I'm coachable, and because I have the grit and hustle to withstand this role. And you can even shed light on, you know, little snippets or examples that you remember including that are attached to those qualities, but keep it short, about 40 to 50 seconds. You're wrapping up your strengths and why you're genuinely interested in the position you're applying to. Don't go on a long tangent. It's so boring. And also your interviewer is just going to get tuned out.
Gosh, that structure right there with the map you just gave us of almost like being a fly on the wall, observing yourself and saying, what attributes did you highlight throughout this interview? And how can you just go back, scan, repeat, and then play it out with energy, enthusiasm, and maybe a little spice of some example?
Yes.
I love that. Okay, so the topic of body language in all different kinds of cues with eye contact and shoulders back and tonality and heart lifted, there's so many things that go into people's impression of you. I know for being a swimmer for 16 years of my life, I have a tendency sometimes to hunch over my shoulders. And when I'm at a desk interviewing or on a Zoom call, I'm like, where are my hands go? Can they see my hands? I'm overthinking things. So give us a play-by-play on how to just get into our flow state when it comes to the nonverbal cues.
Totally. This is a great question. And to be quite frank, I've had so many qualified candidates get dinged and not given a final offer because they're not making eye contact, because they are being monotone, because they are not smiling. So the biggest thing that I could say is show that you want to be there and show that with your body language. So make sure that your eyes are locked in on that person that you're chatting with. I am a big user of my hands. I use my hands a lot. I think that it allows you to get a little bit more animated and get just more excited overall. And you're on. You're 100%, 110% on in an interview. So if that means you need to have a coffee, if that means you need to get 10 hours of sleep, then do it, because you are being evaluated. And so you want to bring your A+ game.
Beautiful. A+ game, being cognizant, getting into your flow. When it comes to those body language cues of matching the other person, are there some interviewers who try to intimidate the candidate and kind of push them to discomfort just to see how they handle it?
Yes, that does happen. And so what I do is I try to prep candidates for that in a mock interview. So for example, there are some interviewers who give no emotion, who just dive into question after question. They're not smiling. They don't sound excited to be there. And they're doing that as a tactic to see, you know, can Gabriella bring her A game, even though I'm a tough interviewer? But don't get intimidated by that. And that's why I recommend you practice your answers in the mirror, because no matter what type of interviewer you have, they're going to be asking you the same questions. So be ready to bring those specific examples with energy and enthusiasm.
Great. And I know a lot of people, Gabriella, cannot see you on the video because this is a voice recording, but they can hear that energy and like the use of your hands behind the voice. And it really carries over well onto the other side. In transition, Gabriella, you've given us so much great framework for not only answering questions, but also cues about tonality and body language and the full package of what goes into the interview. And when it gets towards the end of a phone screen and you can kind of feel the hints of that interviewer leaning towards that transition of where they're asking you questions to when then you're going to be saying, oh, do you have any questions for me? So walk us through kind of what that feels like and some advice you might have around that transition.
Definitely. This is my favorite part of an interview, to be honest. I'm always so intrigued to see what types of questions a candidate will bring. And I know a lot of other interviewers are the same. So first off, bring a notepad. You should be writing down some notes on the multiple people that you're chatting with. Usually for an on-site interview, you're chatting with a few team members. So bring a notepad. Have some questions written down. And I'm not saying talk like a robot and read the questions off word for word. Oh, what's your company culture like? How many employees are there? I am talking about intelligent, curious questions. So what I mean by that is questions you cannot find on the website. So provide some context with these questions and why you're interested in asking a certain question. So to provide you with an example, let's say I'm interviewing at Vendition, chatting with our director of sales, Nick White. Nick White writes a lot of content on LinkedIn. I love his content. He writes a ton of articles. So saying something like, hey, Nick, I noticed you wrote that article about not having a four-year degree, but that not really making a difference in your sales career. You know, I am in a similar position. I have a ton of sales experience at AT&T and doing car sales. How did you get your foot in the door? How did you begin to tell your story, even though you didn't have that four-year education on your resume? So questions like this, where you could only ask Nick White or the interviewer or whoever it is you're chatting with, and why it's important to you, you know, giving some context, giving some background, and that's going to open up a deeper conversation.
Gabriella, thank you for that example, because it so much speaks to the heart of the person on the other side. I don't think anyone wants to be treated like a number in a position. And if you can show that employer that you do have a heart and you want to connect with them on a deeper level and open up a conversation that might provoke a story that you can connect to, now all of a sudden your candidate or that person who's aspiring SDR has an opportunity to create a feeling and an experience that their competition maybe isn't doing. So I loved how you got ahead of that with a specific example. I remember when you interviewed me, you said, Penelope, I watched the video that was on your LinkedIn profile and I loved how you commanded the room. I'm so excited to have you here. We are so excited to have you here. And that just shot straight to my heart. I was looking at lots of different opportunities, but everyone at the company that I got a chance to interview with gave me a feeling of compassion, personal touch, and the approach was incredibly genuine. It didn't just come from, you know, this is how you do an interview. So thank you. That leads me to my next question. Oftentimes when you've asked a number of different questions that are super tailored, prepared, they're flowing well, they're telling stories, they're responding, and then you got to put your courageous pants on and you just have to close out that interview and make sure that you have clarity on where you stand in the interview process and what the next steps are. So how do we make that transition without being awkward?
Love this question. It's key too. Every good salesperson knows how to close, right? So if you can't do that in an interview, they're not going to be confident that you're going to be able to do that with a prospect. So I would say you're gonna feel a point where, you know, the interview is winding down. You've already asked three or four questions, and so your final, your last question should be a closing one. And so what I mean by that is asking something like, hey, do you have any reservations about moving me forward? The affirmative, which I like as well, is how could you see me adding value to your team given my skills and background that I've detailed out for you? So whether it be asking about reservations, about whether you would be adding value, whether it just be like, hey, do you have any feedback for me after, you know, this 30-minute phone screen? And always asking about next steps. Just because it's an onsite does not mean that's the final step. So in tandem with the closing question, make sure you ask, and what are the next steps? And ask the timeline on when you're expected to hear back from the team. That shows that you're eager, that shows that you're organized, that you will follow up on Friday if they say that you will hear back on Friday. So now I know that those were a few different questions, but I hope that answered
your question. Wonderful job, not only explaining, do you have any reservations about me as a candidate? Because that promotes a communication style of being radically candid. And if they do have reservations, that interviewer is going to get a chance to bring that up, then giving the candidate a perfect platform to do what, Gabriella?
Provide feedback, and honest feedback. And if to be honest, if the company does not give you that feedback and they reject you, that's not somewhere you want to work. They will give you an opportunity to clarify an answer that you gave or clarify something about your background.
That's wonderful. And I loved how you transitioned into not only asking about reservations, but being specific about the day. Because oftentimes we can leave that vague. Oh, we're going to be interviewing candidates for the next few weeks. No. That's not clarity, right?
Get a day so you can follow up. I can't emphasize the importance of following up enough. No one's going to hand you the job. You got to ask for it.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Last question for you, Gabriella. The importance of the follow-up thank you email. First, let's start by how should they be retrieving this information so that they can follow up? What's the timeline for the follow-up and what should be included in that message? Not only the message, but also the title of the email.
Definitely. So number one, follow up, but at least 24 hours after your interview. I actually follow up the night of. If you can, follow up within 2 hours. The sooner the better. If you don't have the interviewer's email addresses, ask the recruiter you're working with. Ask anyone that you're in touch with at the company who organized that on-site. If they don't provide you with their email address because of security reasons or privacy reasons, add them on LinkedIn. And connect and message. And what you're really trying to do is thank them not only for their time, but also include something memorable about the conversation. So, you know, whether it be the fact that someone told you about how they got to that organization or what their top rep is doing there, whatever it is, it shows active listening skills and that you really were not just, you know, you were there and present during the interview. It should be brief, short, about 5 to 6 sentences. And always asking about next steps and if the company needs anything further for them to push your application forward.
That's great. And thank you for clarifying on the specifics of what should go in that email. In addition, have you ever had an experience where a candidate made a spelling or grammatical error in a follow-up thank you email?
I have. I don't hold it against them, to be quite honest. I think the fact that they followed up means a lot, but you should be double checking, triple checking. I mean, it's okay. It's not the end of the world, but double check.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I did forget one question, and that was when you are asked a question, tell me about a time when you made a mistake. What is the interviewer looking to extract from that specific question?
Yeah, great. This is a tough question. And one that shows a lot about a candidate. So what I mean by that is they are testing, can Gabriella fall flat on her face and pick herself up? Specifically to the SDR role, like, are you gonna be able to have the stamina to make mistakes and learn from them? So I don't want you to share an innate flaw, like I'm always running late, I'm unorganized, I don't know how to manage my time. I want you to talk about a time you really did mess up. So, you know, for example, I can give one of my own. When I was first new as a relationship manager, I messed up bad with a group on-site interview in organizing that. We were presenting 3 candidates to the company, and I had all 3 candidates show up at once instead of staggering them. And so I right away picked up the phone. I apologized to the manager, did damage control and had the candidates, you know, sift through and go to various coffee shops until their designated half hour. But at the end of the day, what I really learned from that is I can't just communicate with managers for major on-sites via email. I need to pick up the phone. I need to sync with them 24 hours prior to a major event like this and make sure that all the moving pieces are clarified. And so, you know, with that example, I called out my mistake. And then I also called out the action that I did moving forward to make sure that mistake never happened again. And that's another key point of this question is, what did you do to really learn from it and talk about those concrete actions?
Wow. Thank you so much for being vulnerable in sharing one of your own personal examples, because as you were speaking about it, people are thinking about mistake they made, how they handled it, how they came out of it, how they realized they could perform better the next time. And lastly, Gabriella, I just want to thank you for your examples, your structure, your eloquence, the variance in your tone of voice delivers this emotional impact to the person listening on the other side. I hope that the candidates are able to take this interview, prepare for their next steps in moving forward through the process of becoming an SDR. And again, thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thank you, Penelope. I just want to say the SDR role is a tough one. It's a hard interview to combat. But at the end of the day, if you have the right prep, if you're coachable, you will see success. And I'm excited to be able to share my thoughts about that.
Okay, and for those candidates that are not already working with you, Gabriella, can you spell out your first and last name so that they can find you on LinkedIn?
Yes, please. Gabriella, last name Cuevas, CUEV as in Victor, AS.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Penelope.
Hi, is this Nick? This is he.
Hi, Nick. This is Penelope. I know I'm calling you completely out of the blue here, and call me crazy. I could be even a complete miss in reaching out to you, but I noticed that you have an SDR position listed on LinkedIn, and I was curious, is that your baby, or is there someone else I should be bugging about that opportunity? Oh, no, that's mine. Yep, I'm recruiting for that role. Got it. Well, curious, you're still looking for somebody for that opening? How many of your candidates have you interviewed? Oh, you know, I'm sorry, who are you? Are you a candidate or are you a recruiter? Well, in ordinary times, we would be kind of an SDR-specific recruitment shop, but it just breaks my heart. There's so many SDRs looking for opportunities and, you know, they're graduating from college with all these student loan debt, and there's just not a lot of jobs open right now. So I got so excited to reach out to you, and we're doing our part in helping use SDRs through the pandemic by actually waiving all recruiting fees for hires made through our program. So wanted to see if this is something I could potentially get on your radar later this week over a 10-minute chat. Yeah, I'm not really sure if that's going to work out too well, but thanks for the call. I think we're all set for now. Got it. Just out of curiosity, for the hires that you're making right now, have you ever considered a contract to full-time hire program? No, tell me more about that. Well, again, I'd love to unpack it over a 15-minute Google Hangout. Can I send you a calendar invite for Thursday at 2?